This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stacio. Weathering a crisis is nothing new to coastal North Carolinians. Decades of hurricanes have shaped a resilient spirit in generations of residents, and they're bringing that spirit to face this pandemic as well. And no one knows this better than Karen Willis-Amspacker. Karen is the executive director of the Core Sound Waterfowl Museum and Heritage Center on Harkers Island. The museum hosts exhibits on local history and houses cultural artifacts. Karen is a lifelong resident of Harkers Island and is a descendant of fishermen and boat builders. And she joins us as we continue our series of conversations, checking in with former guests of this show to find out how they are faring in this moment. Welcome back, Karen. How are you doing?
It's great. We're great. It's a beautiful day on Harkers Island.
It is, and it is an island, and it just strikes us, certainly strikes me, about how differently this pandemic can be perceived and felt in different places. If you're in a congested place like New York City, it's one thing. And then you're on an island, an isolated place. And I wonder how your community and how you sort of first received the news, even as the news, the depth and scope of this pandemic began to sink in.
I think it came in pieces and parts. It was very distant in the beginning. China is a long way away. And then all of a sudden, it's here. It's Washington State. And so it became a different conversation. I have a son in New York, so I was especially in tune to the news as it was coming down, talking to him every day. But still, it seemed like it was that's not going to come to North Carolina, but it did. And then, we were in the process. I've been listening to all your conversations about storms. The museum has not been open since Florence. We closed the Monday before Florence hit on Thursday. And we were making plans to reopen April 1st, and all of a sudden, all that got pulled out from under us. So it was a lot of reality in a small period of time that, okay, yeah, we've weathered a storm, we dodged Dorian, we got all ready to get back in this place, and here we have a pandemic. So
yeah.
It's been a hard dose.
Well, and you were closed for 20 months, right? I mean, so that was, you were really looking forward to opening those doors.
We are. We're regrouping for next Friday, the 22nd, to open. Our county has been very diligent in trying to manage this pandemic. We've been very fortunate, though. I think we're up to 35 cases. We've had 3 deaths. 2 of the deaths were actually commercial fishing families down in South River, 2 men in the same family. So we know it's real. Our lives have been greatly impacted, but I think these storms and generations of storms have, here we have a way of adapting and accepting things that I'm not sure people in better programmed places do, if that makes sense.
Well, it certainly does. I think when the unpredictable, is part of your life, and when you understand that you cannot control everything and it slaps you in the face at least once a year, yeah, I think you have a better understanding about how all of your preparations and plans for things can often go awry and are perhaps more resilient and better prepared.
I think the point of that you cannot control things, I think that's been a real a realization in this conversation between generations and also between urban and rural is that, I think my parents, they went through a world war, they went through a depression, they knew they could not control things, but our society had been, at least, in the United States, had been pretty confident in their decision making, and they felt like they pretty much could make things happen or not happen. And this virus, I think, has been a real heavy dose for the young generation that, we can't have high school graduation. We can't go to a baseball game. So it's been a very steep learning curve.
So you can understand how people who face storms every year, hurricanes every year, understand that you can't control and what is uncontrollable is bigger than you. But in some ways, this is so different as well, because the hurricane, at least after a day or two, leaves, and this thing isn't. And so I wonder if that means, there are ways in which no one is prepared for this, and Harkers Island residents as well.
Well, we've said all along, we know what to do with a hurricane. I mean, we got that figured out. You don't know what to do with this. It is a whole new ball game. But we, you know, again, I believe the state of North Carolina has done an excellent job in managing the information and the decision making. So far, we've been very fortunate. We share a big concern with, like, people up the Outer Banks and in all tourism communities, that as we open the doors and the season comes, what will we be facing in July and August? There's a real uncertainty, and I know Tom Paul well, that you talked to earlier from Ocracoke. They had not gotten open, you know, since Dorian, and there's real concern there because there are zero hospital beds on Ocracoke. And so what do you do if someone brings it, and before you even know it, 30 people on Ocracoke have the virus, or 25 people on Harker's Island? So it's very serious, but you can't stop just because a storm comes and knocks you off your feet. You got to get back up and push on, and that's the part I think that everybody's going to learn in this, because it will not always be just like this.
Well, and one of the things that a museum like yours does, or your communities does, that you help direct, is to remind us of those historical events and the ways in which people have coped. And so I wonder, as you get ready for reopening, what kind of exhibits are going to be on display?
Well, we're redoing most everything that was in the building. And one of two exhibitions that was hanging in September 2018 had to do with storms. We had partnered with a project on Long Island to talk about community resilience, and we had what we called Harm's Way, which was a historic look at storms and how they had shaped our communities and our character, our personalities. And so we had that on one side of the building. On the other side, we got really brave before Florence and hosted an exhibition by Ryan Stancil and Baxter Miller that was funded in part by North Carolina Sea Grant called Rising. And it was a photography oral history project that talked about change in coastal Carolina. And, you know, we were very careful not to hit, you know, the buzzwords that would scare people off politically or whatever. But we're just looking at saltwater intrusion, ghost forests, you know, how the trees are dying, the marshes, how they're broken up, and just looking at our area. And so we hung them at the same time, but we were not brave enough to put them together. But now, as we're opening the museum, we're putting them together, the best pieces of both, and then asking some of those questions that Rob Young was asking earlier on. We're working with him about our community resilience and what is our plan, because we know the storms are going to come. We know the tide is rising. How are we going to be better prepared and better adapted to a new world? And so change continues, and we are trying to, in a subtle but yet persistent way, encourage community members to think about this, because it really is a bottom-up decision.
Yeah, and you're in a fascinating position to make that, because on the one hand, you're asking the community to look forward and to offer ideas, and looking back can be a help. And I know you're listening to those oral histories as part of this, and I wonder what you're hearing in those oral histories.
I think I hear a spirit among our people that we're tough, and people are proud to be tough and resilient. You know, that's a whole new word. I'm not sure I like the word. It just seems very academic, when in reality, what resilience is getting up and starting again. Yeah. It's working with what you've got. It's making sure that you build back stronger than you were before.
And people can remember typhoid epidemic, and not just storms, but also other epidemics that
exactly.
have been experienced.
And world wars.
Yeah. Not to mention a depression. So I want to hear a little bit from one of those oral histories. And before we do, maybe you can tell us a little bit about Louis Piner.
Louis Piner's first class, and he's from the community of Davis Shore, which was the epicenter of Hurricane Florence in down East Carteret County. They had been flooded during Isabel. They had been flooded in Irene, and then here come Florence. And for many, it was what they were talking about in Robeson County. It's the repeated hits that change your attitude. But there's a tribe of people who are still determined to stay here, to adapt, to build back stronger than before. And so Louie's part of that generation that's not ready to leave yet.
No, and well, you were talking to him about his experience in Florence, and he said, well, he remembers what his mother said.
The storm of record for Davis was the 33 storm. There were a lot of hurricanes in 1933, and they didn't name them back then. But everybody refers to it as the 33 storm. And my mom was 13 when that storm happened, and she told me several times that the water went to the fifth stair step in the 33 storm in my granddaddy's house.
That's Louie Piner, lifelong resident of Davis in Carteret County. I'm talking to Karis Willis-Amspacker, who's head of the Core Sound Waterfowl Museum and Heritage Center on Harkers Island. And so we talked about some of the themes that come through in all of that. But I'm wondering, too, at this moment, what the emotional toll of all of this is when you compound sort of still recovering from past hurricanes, looking forward to the next season in the midst of a pandemic on Harkers Island. People have been resilient. People come back. You talked about that, you know, standing up and getting back at it. Does anything feel different to you now, Karen, in this moment?
I don't think so. Not for us. And again, we've been fortunate. We've not been in the heat of the battle, so to speak, with this virus. I think if the virus came in and circulated through this community, that might be a different story. But at this point, I think people have taken it in stride. They've taken it seriously, maybe in some cases not seriously enough because it has been so distant. But I think people here, their commitment to this place and to each other, their families, their communities, is so strong that they're going to do whatever it takes. And, you know, the schools, I think the children and those folks in rest home facilities, I think, have borne the brunt of this epidemic here, because the kids, you know, they need that school structure. They need that high school graduation. And I worry, as a former school teacher, what are they missing in the curriculum this year that's going to make next year so hard? And what is next fall going to look like? So they've got a lot to overcome when this is over. But the residents of rest homes and their families are really heartbreaking. Because my mother was in a facility like that five different times, and I cannot imagine having her in a place like that, and I cannot get to her. That you have to go to the window and knock. So, I mean, those are hard adaptations to make, and people are doing it for the safety reason and trying to control the virus and, you know, flatten the curve and do what the authorities say. But it's very hard. It's very hard, but we are pressing through.
Well, we've certainly not have very much experience with a pandemic like this and how to cope with it. You've had much more experience coping with hurricanes and severe storms out of the Atlantic, and I wonder, certainly we've learned a lot of lessons, but you know, what lessons are left to be learned? I mean, do you think that we're, you know, what needs to be done still to prepare for hurricanes, do you think, in your community?
In my community, I think the greatest need, I think every family prepares, but I'm not sure we are as prepared as a whole community as we should be. We are very vulnerable to road washouts, just like, you know, Highway 12 up at Rodanthe and Hatteras. You know, we've got some roads that are literally inches from the high water mark. Some are below the high water mark at times. I'm not sure that we are as prepared to be isolated from the rest of the world as we should be. We're a part of Carteret County, and Carteret County has roughly 70,000 people, and down east you got about 6,000, maybe 6,500. So we're a small share of the total county population, but we're spread out between marshes and creeks and little bridges here and little bridges there. In Florence, there were three bridges down here that were damaged. So I really wish that as a collective community that we could really sit down and talk to ourselves about what happens if the bridge if the marsh at North River washes too, and if the bridge between Williston and Davis washes through. How can we learn from other communities to have a better preparation and do a better job at meeting our needs once the storm comes through, the power's out, we can't get cell service, and we don't have a road.
I would think one of the most, in fact, the most difficult part of that conversation when it comes around to this has to be the question of relocation, which, as you've heard, I think, you know, previously, when there are repeated episodes over a short period of time, that's when people begin to take that more seriously. And certainly if resilience has been your core strength, the idea of packing up and leaving is not any part of that, right? So, it sort of works against your greatest strength. I wonder, though, if that conversation now is being taken more seriously.
It is. It is. In fact, I've done a couple of programs, and it's like, do we stay or do we go? When you start looking at the history and the statistics, and every family has to look at their situation and make that decision. We have had some people who have moved, people who I never thought would have even mentioned it, said it out loud. They've made the decision, and they said, we're just tired of rebuilding. We're tired. So everybody has to make their own decision. And prepare the best they can. And like Ernie Foster up at Hatteras says, when this island goes, I'll go with it because I want to be buried right here. And I think there's a lot of that spirit here too. But I'm not going to say what I'm not going to do, but I know for now I'm staying here.
I think we're all happy you do. I hope it all works out very well for you and for all the people there, Karen. And thank you so much for doing what you're doing and for talking with us today. Thank you, Karen.
Thank you.
Karen Willis-Amspacher is head of the Core Sound Waterfowl Museum and Heritage Center. And you can find out more at our website, stateofthings.org.